Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Friday, February 21st. I'm Olivia Rose. At least 9 U.S. Forest Service employees in Petersburg lost their jobs over the weekend. That's after President Donald Trump signed an executive order last week directing the newly formed Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, to reduce the federal workforce. Petersburg has around 3,300 residents, about 80 of which are federal employees, and around 60 of them work for the U.S. Forest Service. Longtime Economic Development Director Liz Cabrera says in a town this size, 9 or 10 lost jobs is enough to impact the economy.
If you look at number of people and just the average wage, you know, the spending power in the community goes down by just under $1 million.
It's possible the recently fired employees will find other jobs in Petersburg. There are lots to be had with the borough, the hospital, fishing, but Cabrera says the goal is not to simply replace jobs, it's to have more people employed and more money circulating in the community. And she says the Forest Service jobs help add stability to Petersburg's economy.
That money comes in regardless of whether we had a good fishing season or not, right? So it's independent of the factors that often drive our local economy. And so losing that, you sort of are losing something that's generally a solid source of spending in our town.
Most of Petersburg's fired federal workers were young people in the first couple years of employment with the Forest Service. Cabrera says that's an added challenge. Southeast Alaska's population is aging, and communities are trying to figure out ways to keep younger people around.
Right. Well, we're always saying that we want to attract and keep young families because that really invigorates a community in a lot of different ways. You know, they're the ones that are usually buying the house, you know, they're putting their kids in school, they're volunteering in different aspects of the community.
Cabrera says if some young families do move away, the effects will go beyond the economy. She says that will affect what she calls the human capital of the town, the relationships the people have, the volunteering that they do, and all the ways those people made Petersburg the place it is. Tinned fish is a revered culinary tradition in Europe. In recent years, the U.S. market for tinned seafood has surged by billions of dollars, and boutique-branded cans of fish are trending on TikTok. And as KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, at the forefront of this swell is a family-owned cannery on Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska.
Wildfish was founded in the late 80s by a school teacher in Kluak named Phyllis Mueller. It's now run by her grandson, Matthew Scaletta. Scaletta is passionate about food. He spent summers cutting fish at the cannery as a kid, and then cut his teeth in the culinary world in Chicago and Portland, everything from bars to fine dining restaurants. And he noticed something.
Places were importing Spanish and Portuguese canned fish. It was kind of quietly, kind of becoming a thing.
Scaletta says at the time, canned salmon stateside was cheap, probably better for stocking a fallout shelter than a charcuterie board. And then he says he saw something that changed everything.
I'm Anthony Bourdain.
That's right. An episode of Anthony Bourdain's show, No Reservations.
Rest assured, this stuff bears no relationship to the can of smoked oysters you ate stoned and desperate at 2 in the morning back at college. This is the world's very best seafood. And here's what's so mind-blowing. It only gets better in the can.
And it kind of blew my mind to see that, right? And it stuck with me.
So when Scaletta's father and grandmother decided to retire from the cannery, he came home to Alaska and took the reins. This was 2015. Scaletta says he saw a hole in the market.
So I set out to be like the first U.S.-based like high-end like craft cannery. And we're still there. I'm still working on that.
Wildfish's cans of garlic sumac rockfish or smoked coho go for about $10 to $14 a can. Scaletta says since he started smoking salmon for the slightly spendier masses, tinned fish is officially on the map in the U.S., but he doesn't take credit for that.
There were other companies who came in after us who, frankly, just had a lot more money.
Scaletta says his business and tinned fish in general really took off in the U.S. in 2020. The cannery's sales and revenue have only been going up since then, and he hopes to soon expand to a second cannery in Kluak. And he says it's hard to keep his most popular products in stock, maybe partly due to some significant national attention on his company. Marguerite Preston edits the kitchen section of Wirecutter for the New York Times. They mostly do product review type stuff. She says she doesn't normally do the actual reviewing, but she really wanted to write a guide to tinned fish.
I would say in the past maybe 3 years, maybe a little bit longer, we've just seen like this growing interest, these trendy new brands, the beautiful packaging.
So Preston and her team collected over 100 different tins, cans, and jars of fish from Europe, Asia, and the U.S. and laid them all out on the counter of their office in Brooklyn. And don't worry, they split it up over 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, and then we just kind of like went at it and felt really pretty ill at the end of each day, to be honest.
Preston published her findings on the website in December. The guide is like an Olympics for tinned fish. Each category has its world champion. Preston says when it came to sampling salmon, the unanimous favorite was Wild Fish Cannery.
You know, I think the thing that stood out the most was the texture. It just had the most kind of like buttery, meaty, succulent texture. Like the level of smoke, you can tell just by looking at them, that have this beautifully kind of like burnished look on top.
Scaletta says it was really cool to see his small cannery getting national press. But the art of canned fish isn't a new idea to an Alaskan. The culture of home canning here was a major inspiration for Wild Fish.
As an Alaskan, one of the most precious things that you have, like in your pantry, is your like your home pack, your smoked and jarred salmon, right? There's definitely a component of Wild Fish that is like taking what we already had, which was like this culture of like home pack and like the idea of a jar of smoked salmon being elevated and kind of bringing that to the masses.
As tinned fish solidifies itself as a high class snack, Scaletta says Wild Fish is going to continue to do what Alaskan canneries have always done, buying high-quality fish from local fishermen and canning it for the masses. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against confirming Kash Patel as President Trump's FBI director yesterday. Senator Murkowski and Senator Susan Collins of Maine were the only Republicans to vote no, so Patel was confirmed. Senator Murkowski said her objections stem from Patel's prior political activities. She wrote in a social media post that the FBI must be trusted to focus on fighting crime and corruption, not on settling political scores. Democrats warn Patel is going to use the FBI to carry out Trump's revenge agenda. Their view is bolstered by a book Patel wrote in 2023 called Government Gangsters. It includes a list of 60, which Patel says is not an enemies list. Senator Murkowski wasn't convinced.
Basically, it's like his own little hit list. And I was like, that's not appropriate.
Murkowski has voted against two Trump nominees so far this term, Patel and Pete Hegseth, now the Secretary of Defense. In her view, both have taken actions that disqualify them from serving. She's voted for others, like Robert Kennedy for Health Secretary, that she still has serious reservations about, but she says she needs agency leaders to return her calls about Alaska's priorities. Senator Dan Sullivan has voted for all of Trump's nominees so far. An investment by the Alaska Permanent Fund in the seafood processing company Peter Pan was supposed to be an investment in Alaska, but it ended in failure to the tune of more than $29 million. That's because Peter Pan collapsed, resulting in the closure of the fish processing plant in King Cove, its main economic engine. While the players are still sorting through the Peter Pan debacle, there are still some big questions about whether the $80 billion permanent fund, the state's largest source of income, which also pays residents an annual dividend, should even be investing in Alaska-based companies. Nat Hertz with the Northern Journal, in collaboration with ProPublica and the Anchorage Daily News, recently wrote about the Peter Pan failure. Hertz told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove that an investigation revealed that permanent fund leadership and its hired investment firm, McKinley Capital Management, either missed or ignored some warning signs that Peter Pan was a risky investment.
The job that McKinley, the finance firm, was doing on behalf of the Alaska Permanent Fund was basically going out and looking for companies that sort of had growth potential or were undervalued and that they could sort of buy into and generate more money and sell it off at a big profit. And so one of the companies they ended up focusing in on was this Peter Pan Seafoods, which was like a longtime corporation that bought and processed and sold the catch of Alaska fishermen. so they have this enormous plant in King Cove, this small community way out there on the Alaska Peninsula. They had a few other plants kind of scattered across the state. So the idea here was, okay, we'll put new money into these plants, like buy new processing equipment maybe and buy more seafood and raise the level of revenue and throughput in the plants, and then we'll have like a much bigger sort of book of sales, and we'll be able to sell the company for a big profit.
I mean, that sounds great. So what's the problem with that?
Well, it does sound great, but generally speaking, the seafood industry is like a really chaotic and volatile industry where you kind of have like boom years and bust years. And so the idea that you could sort of easily build your revenues up and just sort of sell it for a profit, like this is a cutthroat industry. It has a lot of other existing players that are trying to maximize profits. And the other thing that really happened here was you had this kind of overall meltdown in global and Alaska seafood markets. And so like this reformulated Peter Pan like ran right into that.
It sounds like there were some red flags that were missed, but did you see anything in terms of like, I don't know, what actual malfeasance or anything else shady?
The short answer is no. I mean, I think that's been a lingering sort of challenge to the reporting. I think, you know, certainly people in King Cove are really quick to blame this really colorful seafood industry player, Roger May, who's like a very wealthy, you know, kind of flamboyant guy who produces Hollywood movies and hunts for buried treasure and just like seems to have all kinds of money everywhere. And actually through sort of this receivership sort of bankruptcy like process, ended up with a lot of the company's assets. But I think, you know, you kind of have everyone pointing fingers at each other. Like, I think the permanent fund points fingers at McKinley and says this was a McKinley deal. You end up with McKinley and the other of the three partners in the business deal pointing fingers at Roger May and saying it's his fault. Roger says, it's not my fault. I loaned the company a bunch of money and lost a bunch of my own money. But the fishermen, meanwhile, like they're mad and they don't feel like there's been a lot of accountability either. But I don't think sort of we are at the place where we can conclude that sort of any one thing was to blame so much as like there was a constellation of things that appear to have contributed to this collapse.
I mean, you mentioned the fishermen in King Cove and that they would be upset by this, but it goes a little bit further than that, right? I mean, in terms of the economic impact in King Cove, and I wonder if you could tell me about that.
Yeah, so one of the major sort of reasons I think I was drawn to this story initially was that you had fishermen who went out, caught fish or had, you know, paid to like upgrade their nets and fix things and get their boats out on the water. And we're going to go fish for Peter Pan. And then Peter Pan all of a sudden closed down the plant and said, yeah, we, you know, still owe some of these fishermen money from past catch that we bought and sold, but we don't have any money to pay them. So you've got fishermen out like tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And beyond that, this is a community that is built on commercial fishing. You know, the huge chunk of King Cove's tax revenue comes from taxes on the catch that's delivered to the processing plant there. It's like a huge employer in the community. It's like a huge sort of anchor tenant for like all these municipal services, power, water, etc. And so without it, you're seeing like families moving away, like the enrollment at the school has like fallen. You have like the potential for them to ask like the state for, you know, aid, basically a bailout. And I think sort of what is really ironic and another sort of reason I felt like this was really a story that Alaskans needed to know about was like, we kind of did this to ourselves, right? Like a state investment that like ended up going bad is now leading to, you know, maybe like the slow or not even so slow death of this community and a situation where like actually they may need to be coming back to the state for like more money. And I think that's, you know, whose fault that is and why exactly it happened. I mean, I think those are actually really important questions that like we should be asking ourselves, given that, you know, this happened, if not because of decision, public policy decisions that we made, certainly like connected to public policy decisions.
That was Northern Journal reporter Nat Hertz talking to Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. You can find the full story in collaboration with ProPublica and the Anchorage Daily News at northernjournal.com or adn.com. For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.